You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. Time for a little worldview watch, taking your Christianity out into the world and testing it and testing the world by what you know to be true and dealing with issues having to do today, kind of creation and evolution as connected to our genetic code or our genome. Speaking us with today is Mrs. Rhonda Reese, who is the genomic supervisor of Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research in Seattle, Washington, and a member also of Zion Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tacoma, Washington. She's the author of a recent article in the March 2017 Lutheran Witness titled "Of Fleas and Ferns," pointing out some of the things that, well, just don't make sense if you're going to talk about random evolutionary chance. Welcome to the show today, Rhonda.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So can you explain a little bit about your profession and background? Not everyone runs into a genomic supervisor every day.
Yeah, that's really just a fancy term, or maybe not so fancy, for a data analyst. I'm a project leader of sequencing project that primarily focuses on children that have a specific type of leukemia called acute myeloid leukemia. That also occurs in older adults, but it does happen in pediatrics as well. And we're doing a large sequencing study at Fred Hutch, and then aggregating all of that data along with some other RNA sequencing data and other analysis of these children's genomes, and trying to find answers for how they acquire this leukemia so early on in age, as opposed to older adults who get it much later. So I basically wrangle data every day. That's pretty much what I do.
So then what's the overlap with what you do and these statistics and what you believe about evolution? Because the way most people would talk today is you can't even work in this kind of a field if you don't believe in evolution.
That's true. I mean, I'm certainly outnumbered, I would say. But I think that when you really understand or really think about the cellular makeup of our cells, and even looking at other organisms that we come into play with every day, dogs, even, you know, things like bacteria. When you really start to look at their genetic makeup and their cellular makeup, and you think about the origins of life that evolution assumes starts from a single cell, it's really difficult to try to make those things come together. And so, you know, mutations are kind of a necessary part of the evolutionary process. And, you know, mutations can happen randomly, and they might be absolutely neutral to the organism, might not have any effect on it. It might be helpful to the organism, or it might have something really horrible, a horrible effect to the organism. But those mutations, in order to advance or even go on to the next generation, have to occur at the germline level, meaning they have to be those mutations have to occur in the reproductive cells, right? And so not just somatic mutations, things that you would acquire after you're born, things that would maybe help you cause cancer or other disease. Some of those diseases are passed on simply because they do occur at the germline level. But most of those things are acquired. So like what I said, leukemia, that's an acquired disease, things that happen after birth. But when you think about how mutations occur at the germline level, and the number of mutations that would have to occur in just the right genes at just the right time in order for those traits to be passed on to the next generation, okay? And then you start compounding that, and those processes have to happen in multiple genes, and those structures of those genes have to reorganize, and perhaps even other information has to be brought in to reorganize into different genes that would help contribute to the organism. You know, when you start compounding all of the necessary things that have to happen just to go from a single cell, which is what evolutionary theory states, you know, occurred after the Big Bang theory. You know, the environment was rich for bacteria, these single-celled organisms. If you take that and you start thinking about how a single-celled organism organizes itself now into a multicellular, highly complex organism like humans, there's just a lot and a lot of statistical random occurrences that would have to happen, even over billions of years. Okay, that, you know, the theory is that, you know, this happened over billions of years, but in my mind, just knowing what I know about the cell and its makeup, and just if you even just think about the differences between us and, you know, take any other organism, it's a pretty big leap for me. And I'm not sure how to explain it, and I don't need to explain it because I believe in something different. But
I like the use of the word compounding there. When you start doing the math as a better, you know, I'm gonna put a bet on whether or not something or not can happen. And you start adding up the odds. It's just not a 2-to-1 odd. It's a whole bunch of a bajillion to one odds multiplied by each other. Your numbers get so big, you need exponents to deal with them. The odds of all that happening. Can you talk a little bit about some of the cellular changes and genetic shifts that evolution has trouble explaining?
Sure. You know, I think I started to address one of them, which is how does a single-celled organism become a very complex multi-celled organism like ourselves, right? So so evolution, you know, describes this kind of branching process where it's not that one species turns into another or evolves into another species, but, you know, the original species is maintained, but then you've got this variation in species that kind of branch out. Okay, that's fine. And that's plausible, perhaps. But really, again, to go from that leap of something like bacteria, okay, which you know, we know can have really harmful effects and cause illness in our everyday life. But just look at some of the various types of pathogens even that we have. We've got viruses. We've got bacteria. There are these bizarre things called prions. They all act very differently, right? They all have very different, not just cellular makeup and genetic makeup, but even just the way that they act in their host cells are just very different mechanisms. Now take plants, for example. Plants, you know, use something like photosynthesis on a regular basis. We certainly don't use photosynthesis, but again, how do you explain, something evolving? Again, from an original ancestor, how do you explain something like plants that have very different cell wall constructions, and we don't have cell walls in our cells? How do you explain things like the need for photosynthesis in a very distinct major branch of the evolutionary chain when you compare it to animal cells? That's a big leap. That's a big shift. Same thing for looking at, you know, even if you want to go back even further and think about right after the Big Bang Theory, you know, the makeup of our atmosphere was very different, supposedly, than it is today. And that environment was rich for bacterial survival and so forth. But, you know, what sort of things had to happen along the way over billions of years to get to our current atmospheric makeup? And how do you explain that when... evolution would say, you know, things like natural selection and pressures and natural pressures that would basically select for this or that. Yeah, but when you have not even higher celled organisms living at that time, what kind of pressures are being exerted on the system to make those changes? I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. And certainly, you know, evolution has a lot of questions that they themselves can't answer. But those would be some of the major, you know, I mean, there's a lot of questions, but those would be a couple of things that I would just right off the bat be like, how do you explain this? I mean, and when you ask an evolutionary biologist some of these questions, you know, it's not like they have all the answers. They can make suggestions for how things happen. But again, it all hinges on the time, you know, billions of years for all of this to occur. Mutations that happen over time, and this idea of natural selection, or these like selective advantages that organisms have that help them advance and evolve from their previous ancestors. But
you're really getting to a point of a statement that you make in the article that I want to ask you about then, because you say that both Christians and evolutionists require faith to hold their positions. And it sounds like kind of what you're saying now is that the evolutionist, you ask them, you know, why do you believe this? And they say, well, I have this theory. And you're like, well, show me how. And they're like, well, you just got to believe it.
Exactly. And I mean, I think the evolutionists can ask Christians the same question, right? And we can point to Genesis and say, well, you know, God defined these very different species and on these days, and we believe it, you know, and we're taking that on faith as well. But to me, And not just because I'm a Christian. I think, you know, I hope I would have these same questions as just kind of a critical thinker, even if I wasn't a Christian and still in the science field. Yeah, like, how does this happen? How do you not at least be open to the possibility that there was a creator?
Well, that brings me to my final question then. Do you think that there is enough that we can observe in the design of nature to convince somebody who is not of a Christian faith or necessarily even believing in a creator, to convince them that there's a design, that Darwinian evolution by itself cannot explain everything?
Sure. I think there's plenty of evidence. And actually, it's using evolutionary biologists' own theory, basically, to and turning it around on its head. You know, one thing that evolutionary biologists will use as evidence for relating all species together is that now that we have the ability to sequence some of these genomes, when you look at the genomic sequence, the DNA sequence of species, from bacteria to invertebrates to vertebrate animals to humans, when you compare these genomes, there are some what are called highly conserved DNA sequences within genes, within other parts of the genome. And I think evolutionary biologists would say, well, you know, there's your evidence. There's your evidence that everything, that things that are necessary across all different types of species, say things like just various cellular processes that are just necessary just to maintain your own species, that those things are highly conserved, and so therefore there must have been an original ancestor. You know, I think that creationists can say, you know, and certainly I don't want to presuppose the mind of God, but, you know, why reinvent the wheel? If you're the creator of the universe, why wouldn't you use the same sequences to create the same proteins that are necessary across various species of life, right? I mean, I think that you can use those same arguments as a defense of what we believe, and I think it makes absolute sense. And that's just one example. But I think, the Big Bang Theory that is such a chaotic type event and that can't be explained, but yet we have this very much ordered system, right? And I think you can look around and see how much order there is when you really look at the details of life. There's so much order, and it's certainly not random. I absolutely believe that that God our Father had an immense amount of purpose in creating this life, and I think that's evident when you start to look at things at the molecular level, for sure.
My guest, Mrs. Rhonda Reese, genomic supervisor at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute in Seattle and member of Zion Evangelical Lutheran Church, Tacoma, Washington, also written this recent article in the Lutheran Witness for March 2017 of Fleas and Ferns. Mrs. Reese, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Pastor Fisk. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
If it's all an accident, then what are you doing? I mean, seriously, if it's all chaos and it doesn't make any sense, why are you bothering to think about it? Why are you bothering to come up with a theory at all? If it is all a mistake, I mean, not only is it all unable to be understood at all in the first place, but what's left but despair? Or, I suppose, power. You just go out and hate and grab and get as much as you can now. Doesn't sound like a happy way of living. Doesn't sound like a way of living that's logical and makes sense to me. I'll tell you what is logical, friends. The resurrection of Jesus Christ. It makes a ton of sense. The history bears it out, and the hope makes it real in your heart, too. Our Lord Jesus, risen from the dead, he is coming again. And I'll tell you what, universe, it may not be today, and it may not be tomorrow, but I'm your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and I look forward to waking up with you at the dawn.